Managing Violence Podcast, Episode 79, Lee Morrison, Part 2. Hello, everybody. Welcome to this second installment of my interview with Lee Morrison. We're going to get straight into it. In this episode, I talk to Lee about how he goes about building instructors and also what he's doing now and what he's doing next with his path to the peaceful warrior. Here he is, Mr. Lee Morrison. I want to pick your brain about another topic, connected but unrelated, and that is instructor development. You've generated some incredible instructors. There are people all over the world under the UC banner that are legitimately the top 1% of combatives instructors or self-protection instructors on the planet. And I know a portion of that is that you've attracted people that are serious professionals to UC. But I would love to know your take on how you actually develop instructors, not only their own skill sets, but their ability to teach.
Right. So first of all, the ones that are really, the ones you're talking about, are really successful. So like Jamie Miller, Mikel Mulder, and Hodge, and Ralph, many others that are in the small circle of it. First of all, I like them. They're my friends. They're good people. And they deserve to get the best from me to bring out the best in them. There has to be that rapport first, because otherwise the motivation's not there. I've got many people that represent UC and they're all really good, but the actual percentage of instructors that do it, first of all, there's a rapport, you know, and that comes from knowing certain things. So, you know, there's a three-pronged approach to learning. And this was first shown to me by Dennis Martin and another guy on a similar type of instructional enhancement program. And they dissected the basics of what makes somebody capable of dealing with violence, let's say, right? Learning, teaching, doing perspective. Well, three-pronged approach to learning is, first of all, experience. Do you have any real experience? Have you had any real experience with violence? Have you been in a fucking violent fight in your life? I don't mean a skirmish and a fisty cuffs. I mean, have you been in a blood and snot fucking fight where you had to give it everything to get out? You know, so if you have had that kind of experience repeatedly, then that's very useful because there's no substitute for experience. There's no better training for the event than the event. Is it essential to your learning? Absolutely fucking not. You could still fucking become extremely capable without that experience. All I'm saying is there's no substitute. Because you know it kinesthetically and emotionally, as opposed to taking it in as intel from an external party auditorily, where you have to fathom out in your head what that is like. When you've been there and you felt it, it's different, right? So life experience. The next would be genetic predisposition. Chances are, if you come from a bloodline of bare-knuckled pikey fighters that are hard as a coffin now, it's in your blood, you know. But if not, and you're quite the opposite that you could imagine to that, there's a chance that you've got no familiarity with violence at all, you know. The final element to the three-pronged approach is training. Training offers the most scope for change. Now, you could go and get some life experience and hang around in some dodgy areas and pick some fights, but it wouldn't be very ethical. So I'll be honest with you. I've said to somebody that really wanted to know. I had somebody that trained like fuck, could do it in, you know, in a training environment. Martial athlete, but never had a fight in his life. And had the nagging doubt, you know, because he was honest. We talked to each other honestly. And he's like, you know, I don't really know, you know, maybe, but I'm not 100%. And it takes honesty to say that. So from there, you should pressure test. So I pressure test the shit out of people that have gone through things like that. And I'm talking full on. Some of the pressure tests we've had, multiple assailants just fucking beating the shit out of each other in a toilet area. I mean, dangerous. So, you know, I've been in worse fights, but, you know, this is also, it's really pushing the envelope with it. So I take my people incrementally, you know, the stages of inoculation. So it's not all banging on at the deep end. But this said person had done some scenario training, and I knew that because he simulated and he could do it, he could pull it out. I'm pretty sure he could. But he wanted some assurance. So I said to him, look, if I could say to you, I'm working on the door back at this old shitty club I used to work at this Saturday, and I need someone with me, I guarantee you, we work on this door, you're going to get some sport. but don't worry, I've got your back, and let's just see how you do. You know, now that would be probably illegal, probably be unethical, certainly be unprofessional, but fuck me, would it help? Like I said, you know, but you don't have to do that. Particular methods of training available now with simulation scenario training, as long as I shift you limbic brain, in that moment, your midbrain, your amygdala detected threat, you've been hit with the adrenaline and you're working under that kind of fight duress, you know it. Your subconscious brain now has access to a file that replicates that stimuli. Which means that, you know, if you find yourself in a situation in for real that even remotely looks like that, you've got some conditioning, which will stop hypervigilance, stop you freezing. People freeze on the spot because they've never been in a situation before. The old subconscious brain is searching for data banks, for memory banks, for a solution that doesn't exist. Because people don't pressure test. They just do it up and down and fucking like in white pajamas in the old days. They don't simulate and scenario test to the degree that they should. But once they do and they learn that, like me, you see a massive progression. And with that progression incremental, you just see growth in the person as a person. Do you know what I mean? So it's like you can't, nothing comes easy in life, does it? So combatants is at the extreme end, and we train hard. I mean, most of my classes, you're signing a waiver. You know what I mean? But look at the result. You know, it's functional. And I believe that to the tier one level, civilian level, particularly if someone has that emotional willingness and that physical capability, I think they've got the best chance that they've ever going to have. That now balances it, well, let's say a lady of the right mindset with that skill set and the tool already to hand because she was aware she was being followed to the underground parking. Now she has that readiness in her brain to access the willingness to take part. Right now, the objective would probably be getting the car, boom, lock the door, evasion gone. Yeah, that would be the first thing. But let's say she gets cornered. Well, now she stabs the first cunt in the eye with something sharp and he's reeling back and she's got the moment to get in the car, she could drive off. If she stabs this cunt in the face before her two friends get hold of her and put the razor to her throat, she's got a chance to run. So it evens out the playing field. Do you understand? And blade work, if you haven't got a firearm, then blade work, or even as an addition, I would say as an addition, blade work can be very clinically efficient if you know, to get it done very quickly. It's a different means, of course, because there's no ballistic value to a blade. So, you know, you have to like shut down sort of switch targets, but with an impact weapon, it speaks for itself. But again, level of force of change. So let's say you picked up a jack handle out of your car because somebody pulled a blade. Somebody was robbing someone in the street and you went to intervene and you've got a bar or something, a jack handle. It's not a kosh or a stick by design, but it's a tool that you could use. Maybe it's a 6L fucking maglite. Well, if I smash this fucker right over the metacarpals of his hand or I hit him in the collarbone, the objective would be to disrupt his ability to use that dominant side so that he couldn't handle or access or wield the weapon in the first place. So I hit him in the collarbone and I smash that because he's holding a weapon. That's a relatively low level of force within a high threat situation. Do you understand? But let's say I do that first and then he takes a swipe and cuts my face and now he's trying to harpoon me. Well, now I'm going to smash it right through his skull. And, you know, that's the kind of willingness that you've got to have. Now, what changed? Nothing. If I've come downward with something stick-like onto your collarbone, I've used a downward hammer fist-like shot as I've dropped body weight. Picture that in your head, right? If I hit you in the collarbone, you're incapacitated. If I use the exact same skill set with a target shift and I target your head, well, now I've used the same skill, but I've gone to a level 10 use of force. There must be a parallel to reflect that. So, you know, I say in seminars and workshops, once they've got an idea of what combatants is, that it's at the extreme end, I'll say, in what situation would you ever think that content was merit to the context, where all of a sudden, I'm going to give you the end part. I'm sat at a table. I've got a blade in my hand in a reverse grip. And I lunge over the table to the right of me, and I stab the person through the eye, pin him on the floor, stab him through the neck and through the lungs. Quick as I can, getting done, finished. What context and what planet must you be on for that to have been considered reasonable and necessary in the moment. And everyone goes, oh, none. Think it through, right? Just let's say now, here's the context that dictated the content of that use of force. Guy walks in, he's sweated profusely, he's wearing quite heavy laden clothing, but nobody's noticed because everybody's switched off, but I fucking noticed. And he walks over, he's looking around, his head's on a swivel, when he sits down in the area next to me. And I'm sat here with my wife and my children, and there's families everywhere. And I look up down and I can see between his legs, he's loading a semi-automatic weapon, putting the magazine in it and ready to chamber it. Well, what's he going to do with that automatic weapon? He's going to kill every motherfucker in the room, including me and my family. But I'm here and I happen to be eating a meal and I've got a steak knife in my hand. Do you know what I mean? Or I've got something pointy on me, whatever. So now if I did that, that's like saying, well, if you could go back in time, would you have took out Hitler? It's a fucking no-brainer, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? So it belongs. And then when you put it in context like that, context always dictates content. Remember that. Doesn't matter what stream I talk to you or teach you or teach you how to go. So I'll teach you how to end life. Context is dictated by the content. Do you understand?
Yeah.
But that's the extreme. That's the worst possible case scenario that you could face. And this is the last ditch fucking worst possible scenario thing that you could do to get out of it. You know, so context of that, you've gone from zero to hero, haven't you? Not that you're trying to be, but most importantly, you protected your family, yourself, and immediate people from a threat. Mm. Yeah. But sorry, I digress. That goes off from the instructional enhancement. Life experience, genetic predisposition, and training, the scope that you've got now for training, the levels of people that are out there, not just within UC, and there's many others out there. They're, you know, been influenced by me and many others still that have good functional programs. But in my experience, if you want the best that you can find, cherry pick, holistically look, go to this person for that, go to this person for that. If someone's got something you ain't got, go there, get it. And it's that holistic approach. So Tier 1C is not about a UC product. You know, I just got the idea together and I run programs that show you the direction to go. You know, I don't sell kit. I don't do anything like that. I don't do any training specific for offensive driving, but I've got people to hook you up with. So, you know, so it's an eclectic thing, but you can get great training. There, you know, that's the main thing. The next thing is the motivation. So from a student point of view, as an instructor, if you've got a student, your main asset, if you like, in order to teach your student is their motivation to learn. So make sure you can create motivated students. So I've never been off the old school where, you know, they thrash the shit out of you and they never give credit where it's due, you know? So somebody could be learning in my class and he could be doing 5 or 6 things wrong. You know, and some people are like, oh, don't even gonna bother with you. Well, I want you to learn. I want you to know how to, because the guy that's doing 5 or 6 things wrong is the one that fucking needs it most, right? So if he's doing 5 or 6 things wrong, guarantee he's doing one thing right. I will go over to him and focus on the thing that he does right. And I will say, see that, John, what you're doing? Perfect. That's what I want. Now, what I want you to do, because you can't fix everything in one sitting, but I'll take one of those things or two of those things that I need to fix. And I say, I want you to do this like this and put it with that. Let me see it. And I'll rep him out, coach him, and get that's it, brilliant, excellent. And then I'll put my hand on him and go, well done. Now, I've just used classic NLP and installed an anchor in him that has just made him feel good when he does said seminars, which ups his motivation, because your key resource for teaching your student is their motivation to learn. So give credit where it's due. It's got to be earned, but give it where it's due and incrementally build people. That would what makes a great instructor in my book. And all my lads can do that. The other is the ability to obviously communicate. You have to have the ability to communicate. So when you do my instructor course, you learn the curriculum level, which will take you up to grade 5. But beyond that is just, that's advanced student, that's it. To go beyond that, you'd have to go instructional enhancement program, which now is like the grade 6 instructorship, which finishes or begins with instructional enhancement. So now I'm not teaching you my curriculum. Now I'm teaching you how to teach it. Right. And basically all of this stuff comes from great people who I give credit for and just my own personal experience learning and doing. There's many things that I can't do. in life, but this is one of them. I was born to do this. I often feel that someone is doing this through me. You know, some higher being or some higher version of myself is teaching through me, because, you know, I don't expect to be that good. You know what I mean? But it's passion is a major part of it. But having the willingness, so we've got to look at your motivation as an instructor. So I just wrote these little couple of notes for you, right? Right. Look at, first of all, motivation from an instructor's perspective. Yeah. So my main motivation, got it here, right, was to teach others workable self-preservation skills. That's what drove me, particularly from the upbringing that I come from. I did not like to see people get violated, so I wanted to do something about it. Secondly, would be to install in my students a sense of confidence and increased self-esteem that they will translate to other areas of their life. So they'll be more confident talking to their shitty boss, or they might get out of a crappy relationship, or might draw some boundaries, or people only treat you the way you let them. You know, first thing comes down to realizing how people are treating you, and then have the confidence to do something about it. Put your stall out, draw the line, right? Third reason that I motivate. So first reason, teaching people workable methods of self-preservation. That's my primary drive to be an instructor. You know, second would be to increase their confidence, etc. More other areas of their life. So, you know, growth in lots of ways. Financial, but earning a living from something that I love. So it's not like working, but with that said, you always pay the toll. So I've paid the toll with a complete hip replacement. Both of my shoulders need replacing. I just fight through it and I keep going. But, you know, so I've paid the toll with my body. But financially, I've done really well as well. Teaching enhances my own ability to grow. So any teacher that starts will really learn when he starts to teach. Because now you're seeing things from so many different people's perspectives, you'll start to get the nuances. So as my student, you just need to know how to do the material. You could ask questions, do your research. Yes, don't question everything. But you just need to know the how to do it. As an instructor, you need to know the whys of the how. Why everything is set this way. Because I made it a certain way. You know, and it all is geared towards enhancing others. Really, that's what it's for. That's where the motivation's got to come from. If the motivation as an instructor comes from, so I thought it'd be cool, called a combatants instructor, might get laid on the back of it. Or, you know, it's just, you know, you think you're going to make a lot of money out of it. You know, you can make money out of it, but it depends how you measure wealth. I don't measure wealth in monetary terms at all. I measure wealth by the fact that I've taught UC in 40 countries. And in all of those countries, I've got brethren. You know, I've got people that are sound. If I was there and I wanted to hook up or stay or go and see them, I could. You know, I've built a real community with UC, so that's where the wealth is for me. You know, it's not a wealthy life by no means. I'm solvent, but you know, it's not a wealthy. I remember Charlie Nelson saying to me, he said, "You never make any money at this, boy."
And by the way, just to in case anyone's under any illusions, you're not going to get laid either.
Speak for yourself, mate.
you think you want to be a combatives influencer on Instagram? Go check out who's following them. It's not a bunch of women. It's a bunch of middle aged blokes in camo pants. So just be mindful of who's gonna idolize you.
Whatever. Yeah, but you've got to sort out what your motivation is as an instructor, you know, and then think about your student's perspective. You know, if you've got a student that watches Joe Saunders' Managing Violence podcast, follows everybody, looks at all the DVDs, does everything, done a bit of this, bit of that, gone to the seminar, trains regularly, does his own holistic approach of his own stuff, he's fucking motivated. That's your best student. He drives himself. The second best that I've come across is somebody I had, sadly, after the event, have had living fuck kicked out of them, and they, you know, they don't walk right and talk right for a little while, and psychologically now they're not the same. And that's a sad thing that you've gone for the cure then. Do you know what I mean? Prevention would have been much better. And then you get somebody that come on the back of the knowledge of a friend, said it was really cool. Or then somebody that saw it on a flyer, thought it looked interesting. And then you get the worst of all. Somebody sent you from a corporate company on a Saturday or a Sunday and they don't want to be here. Do you know what I mean? in all of those cases, their motivation is your primary resource for teaching that student. So how do you teach somebody like that? How do you start to motivate them? Now you need to create the need to learn. So let's say we're working counter knife, awareness of knife, because understand no method of anything anywhere has any foolproof guarantees for dealing with a knife. There isn't, you know. The best that you can get for is a damage limitation, deal with a threat, seek medical management. And inside of that is a good, you know, if you didn't get caught lethally or cut, then you did well, but there's no guarantees, right? I've been in 6 knife situations in my life. So you need to create the need to learn. So let's say it's a counter knife class, right? And the student don't really want to be there. I might start with a CCTV clip that depicts somebody's murder inquiry. It was used as evidence in a court trial because this person is actually dying here. And unfortunately, that kind of thing is everywhere now. You know, I mean, you go back 15 years ago, what you would see in terms of violence on TV or actually leaked in the news or shown, let alone on any clip or video, was quite tame in comparison to what they show now. And they show you everything. And you'll quite often get clips of people getting stabbed to death. Well, that's desensitizing people to that to a degree, right? And if you were one of those, you know, kind of beta type profiles that's popular and is everything into the media and everything else, you're probably living in a little bubble where you think that's never going to happen to you, but you're still desensitized to looking at it. So, you know, but before that, it got to this point, the average person had never seen somebody get stabbed to death on a video of CCTV. Do you know what I mean? His distance is seen gray and it's blurry, but that kid's dead. And for the normal person, that's quite, oh my God, fuck. You know, I don't want that to happen to me or anyone I care about. What have I done now? Just created the need to learn. Now to pay fucking attention. So really, as an instructor, communication is huge. So you've got to recognize how people's learning curves are. Some people are auditory, visual, kinesthetic. Some people are all. So you use a principle called VAC. If I'm giving you a demonstration in a seminar class sense where we're not one-on-one, then I will use visual, auditory, kinesthetic. So I will visually show you an example, I'll auditorily explain it to you, and then you'll get hands-on. That's the best way to teach. If I'm working with you, let's say, in a private lesson in my garage, and we've got to know each other, then based on how you communicate, verbal predicates or whatever else, I'll pick up on how you learn best. So he's auditory, or he's visual, or he's kinesthetic. Most people are a combination. Do you know what I mean? But if I say to you, do you understand? And you went, yeah, I get it. That indicates to me that you're more of a feeling type person. And if I say, oh, yeah, I see what you're saying. Well, it speaks for itself. Oh, yeah, that sounds logical. Yeah, how you talk verbal predicates like that, it gives you a cue to pick up on, right, let's test that again, because he learns best this way. And that's what basic NLP is. You know, the old Carl's car salesman story, where the car guy trying to sell the car is visual. And he's trying to sell the car to a guy that's more auditory. So he says, look at this beautiful red car and it's shiny. Wow. Doesn't mean anything to the guy that's auditory. He'd have been better to say, listen to this engine. Turn it on and roar it. So when you can recognize that, you can get rapport really quickly, and then you can lead and pace, etc. And that's the objective there, of course, is not to manipulate. The objective there is to put you in the best state for receiving information, the best I can give it. Do you know what I mean? So it's a passion. So the instructional enhancement program incorporates all of those kind of advanced learning technologies, NLP, that kind of stuff, in neural-based learning. So to accelerate your ability to install the skill quickly. Yeah. So a lot of my lads that come in, they've all done that. Every instructor has done that. So, they can all teach well. Then, of course, it comes down to the individual. So the individual, you know, if you've got a bit of personality, you've got a bit of charisma or whatever else, then you're going to do well. If you're more of a private, secluded type of person, not so outspoken, then you'll just be a good teacher. But this will really bring out, you know, who you are. You know what I mean? As you go through the levels of learning. So the levels of learning, you know the levels of learning, right? Just run that by you. So first of all, when you don't know something, you are unconsciously incompetent. You don't know what you don't know because you don't fucking know, right? Then when you get shown something that you didn't know, you become consciously incompetent. Oh, yeah. No, I don't know that. Right? Well, when you practice or model the movement pattern to a degree with a very short period of time, particularly if the skill set is gross motor as it should be, you will become consciously competent. That is, if I think about what you just said and I do it just that way, I can do that. So you're learning the skill. You're starting to cut the neural pathway. Does that make sense? But in order for you to download that neural pathway to your subconscious brain, so it's in there as an option, you need to drill. Now, two trains of thought on that. You know, 10,000 repetitions. Well, 10,000 correct repetitions would be correct term. Or 150 repetitions like my life depended on it. So in emotional state, under fight duress. So now I'm fusing it in emotionally. Do you understand? Yeah. So the best of both worlds would be, well, how about 10,000 reps in emotional content, like your fucking life depended on it, that you accumulate over a period of time? Well, guess what? You do that, you'd be amazed at what you can get used to. Mm-hmm. And it's that if you're willing to go that far, then you'll become unconsciously competent very quickly. And you become unconsciously competent. So you do it like without thought. You know, you weren't like when you started driving, it's like how you drive 5 years later or a year later even. Do you know what I mean? You're unconsciously competent. Now you can multitask. Well, if you take a certain skill set or an activity beyond that consistent level of unconscious competence and you drill the shit out of it, so drill it till you know it, drill it till you own it, you'll reach a level, another level, and that level is mastery. Now, you can't reach the level of mastery with everything. You know, you can get close. That's why your toolbox should be short. But in a very short period of time, I would say to you, learn your best main artillery preemptive strike for your dominant hand and your best main artillery preemptive strike for your non-dominant hand. So if you had the situation working from your hands are up, you had the ideal range for the ideal split second, what shot would you aim at the button with? So once you know what that shot is, drill it till you know it and then drill it till you own it. Now you go beyond unconscious competence and you get to the point in that skill of mastery. And when you get to that point of mastery, it's usually got your signature. Do you know what I'm saying? So I have a couple of signatures that I know I have, non-verbal. And I see my students model them. And that's not wrong. So you should model a good example. But eventually, when they iron out all those things that they don't need, it have their signature. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if you understand the sequence of how we learn, and you know how to install it in others and make the best of how best they learn, you can work out their learning curve, then you can create excellence. And that's the example of that. That's the lads you're talking about. That's what I did with them.
Mate, that's incredible. And I'm so glad I asked that question because I think, I mean, you're so well known as a combative guy in terms of a physical skill set, but you're an incredible teacher. And I think
appreciate that. Thank you.
Don't really appreciate or at least give it, or at least think of you in terms of as a teacher as opposed to just a practitioner.
Like I said, there's a lot of things in this life I can't do, but this I was born to do. It's almost like something's doing it through me. But yeah, I'm supposed to have this knowledge, you know. And I'm like anything, you're supposed to go through the mill of life in order to know what you're talking about and to be able to preach it legitimately. Do you know what I mean? So I know violence. I've known it since I was a young kid. You know, I'm been writing what I intend to leave this business with, which is my autobiography, man. And then there's been a major momental shift inside of that period where I started the book, which will obviously go on to this part. And it's what I intend to sort of, you know, maybe retire with. But the shift that it's created has brought about the more balanced side of things, you know. So I guess without thinking about any of this, when I learned how to deal with violence and dish violence out, is out of an act of necessity, and it became a part of my life, and then it became passion, and then, you know, so it was almost like I was supposed to do it. But the spark for it was, you know, the school of hard knocks, shall we say. I had to know violence and face violation before I could find it within me to fight. And then I just pursued that. And, you know, there's no way that I'm going to be victimized like that again ever in my life. And then, you know, the progression went on and on and on and on. But the point is, the conclusions that I've come to that I can impart on others well were earned. You know, I had to go through the mill in order to teach you from the heart what I'm teaching. And like anyone in any business, particularly in this business, if you are full of shit, you're going to get found out. Do you know what I mean? You really are. So you've got to teach honest from the heart and with passion. And that would be my best advice in terms of be honest. You know what I mean? As a teacher, know your motivation. If your motivation is, I just think it'd be cool, or I just want to earn some money, or I just want to be a badass, then you'd be a shit teacher. You know, it's just the same, isn't it? You don't put your mind, heart, and body, and soul, and spirit into it, you know, you're only going to get mediocrity back. Does that make sense? So I know UC is a great community. See, it was very difficult in the beginning, because in the beginning, everybody made UC about me. And it wasn't about me ever. You know, I didn't want it to be about me, you know, but it was about, the way I moved, my attributes, et cetera, et cetera. It was actually, I wanted it to be about what UC is. And now it's all about UC, and it's great. And you're seeing, you know, other guys coming into the fruition that are the attracted light for it, if you like. But, you know, it's going where I want it to go. And to be honest, it was flying before this pandemic bullshit. Absolutely flying. You know, we got a headquarters.
Fly again, mate. Don't worry about that.
Got headquarters in Europe, ran by Ralph. He's a fucking great guy. Really, really capable instructor, good teacher. And he's you know, they got a great business mind. So he kind of put the model on a more constructive path, if you like. Because, you know, I'm just easy going bloke. I just always wanted to be able to do this and teach other people. I had no aspirations to become an instructor. When I started, I think I told you this before, but when I started a small little club up with a small niche of people, I said to them, look, I'll be honest, I just want meat puppets. I just want people to pressure me and I'll fucking pressure you. And they're like, yeah, going. And then like six people turned into like 10 people, and then it needed some kind of curriculum. And then all of a sudden I'm teaching. So I kind of got guided into it. I used to go to seminars all around the country, and you know, all over the world, but all around the country in particular with some of the top, you know, people, Dennis Martin, Pete Robbins, stuff like that. And they were within a couple of weeks, they'd be like, Pete, can you teach this? So it had gone from me training to me being a teacher, and I kind of went with it and made the first couple of videos. And I thought, well, man, you know, I can fucking do this. And I remember doing the first ever TV thing we did. It was a 15-minute slot or 10-minute slot on Ultimate Warriors, which was a Bravo TV show. And I can remember, it's the first time I've done film. And I felt fucking nervous. And I was like, oh, well, no. And I went, look, love, I'm just going to ignore you and teach. And she goes, yeah, all right. And fuck me, that was it. It was perfect. So now, you know, don't even need a rerun. You know, didn't need to take. I've been out to the Crucible when it was open with Kelly, and we shot two videos in 2 days and didn't have a single retake. You know, that's, you just blows this shit. Like I said, many things I can't do, but this I can do.
Mate, to bring us to a close, I mean, I love watching your journey, and I watch a lot of your content and read a lot of your posts. And something you've been alluding to recently is your Path of the Peaceful Warrior, or the Peaceful Warrior initiative that you're starting up. And it seems like a juxtaposition when we've spent half a conversation talking about taking lives, and now we're talking about being
a warrior.
I would love to give you a platform just to introduce what that's about, what it's going to look like, what's this next evolution look like for you.
Right, okay. So, I mean, the tier one civilian stuff will still be prominent, of course, but, you know, to be honest, I fucking hate violence. I really do. I'm just really fucking good at it. But I hate it. I really hate it. I've always been a peaceful soul. I know I'm not a sociopath. I have the ability to access a level of aggression that will eclipse anyone I face, I'm pretty sure, you know. And in that moment, it's fucking active state. I can switch it on and off. But I hate it. And the place I'd most rather be is the place where I'm most happy and around the people that I'm in my high energy vibration. Well, yeah, when this all started, this situation, we've been up and in and out of lockdown for a fucking year. soon as this started, I smelled a rat immediately. I was awake to it. I'm a street kid. I left home at school when I was 11 years old, mate. I learned to trust my instincts. And I know when someone's mugging me off. And I followed the path with that. So I got awakened, if you like, in the sense of what's going on. And those are people that are still asleep. Well, it won't make any fucking sense to you, but, you know, it's not my problem. I'll see you when you get there, if you ever get there. But the idea of... peaceful warrior really come from wanting to explore the other side, because there's no front without a back. And the summit for any, maybe not martial athlete, sport connotation of different area, but any martial practitioner really, really serious about their craft, you know, from young. So I've been doing this shit since I was 11. You know, that's where I started. I mean, when I say this year, I mean physically practicing to do destructive things, right? So how can you not get good? But the warrior summit for me was somebody that he passes through all that. Now, when I went through my door career, particularly towards the end, I started to find that. So what do I mean by that? What I mean by that is I was known to be very explosive on the door. So I knocked 2-3 people out in really quickly, and that gives you a bit of a reputation. And everybody who didn't know me, for me, would think, well, think whatever they think, and then people talk about as they talk. In the end of the day, if I've had to knock out 3 people, it's because they were good bad to give us a serious fucking problem, or they already had, you know, because if they would have walked, I would have let them. If I could have talked them down, I would have done. And it weren't for the want of trying. So, but somebody who doesn't know me and only sees that, you get a reputation of being just that. Does that make sense? So towards the end of my door career, I really mastered the art of communication and deception, and I verbal dissuasion, verbal judo. And I could really do it quite well. I mean, you've had Richard Dimitri on here, and he says it, you know, he said that it's usually two kinds of people in terms of verbal de-escalation. There's the normally good guy having a bad day, and then there's the company agenda. Right? Well, if he's with the agenda, nothing you do is going to work. But if it's just a decent dude having a bad day, I will talk these people down very quickly and get rapport and, you know, and shut down. And that to me was going somewhere. Because that was, for me, on so control of my potential adrenal stress and so confident in my ability that I want to let you off. Do you know what I mean? And I want us just to change this and be mates. And I met a lot of good mates like that who I was in touch with for a long time. You know, I just talked them down. Don't get me wrong, can't talk everyone down. But my point is, in a potentially violent place, I managed to deal with it with talking and communication. That's an evolvement. The spiritual side of things that always eluded me. So I can remember seeing Sat in the presence of Jeff, and Jeff talking about his spiritual summit. Because, and you know, and Jamie O'Keefe was there, I think. I can't remember, but I looked at him and I kind of went, "He's lovely. He's like found himself in the spiritual awakening." You know, I kind of had this born again Gandhi thing in my head. Do you know what I mean? And I wish you luck with it, Jeff. Do you know what I mean? But it ain't me. And, you know, Jamie O'Keefe said something along similar lines. Yeah, you fuck with me, I'll always steal your face. That'll be who I am, you know. And to be honest, that is still who I am. But with what's been going on as well now, you know, I speak candid. And not many people agree with my views and everything else. But that doesn't, I'm good at UC. So, you know, if you like UC, then shouldn't matter to you what I think or say. You know, it's not going to offend you directly. If it is, you don't want UC, really. So, you know, I'm like, spiritual side of things really eluded me until now. This awakening of what's going on led into exploration. And then when I went into the exploration, it was really quite dark. And when I looked at how dark it was, I needed to find, to see if there was any balance, you know. It was almost like, fucking hell, are there any good people in the world left? It was a bit like that. And that kind of led me to look in certain areas. In short, I felt for a significant period of time that I didn't belong in this little 3D dimensional box anymore. but I wasn't what you would call enlightened or elevated. I was somewhere in between, and no man's land. I didn't belong here, and I knew I was for better things, or there's more than this. And then literally, I don't know whether it was from the 21st of December, that planetary alignment, I went to a place called Glastonbury, which is a sacred place, and with a means to look at it, but you can see anything. Fucked with the weather, you can't see fuck all through the clouds. But there was a really great atmosphere and a very high vibration. And some days after that, around to the 23rd, I remember, this may sound crazy to you, you know, I'm like, I'm not educated, self-educated, man. I'm successful. I don't, you know, I say it as I see it. I'm not all of a sudden just, you know, swallowed a happy pill. I'm talking from the heart here, right? So I just felt this. It was a really bright day. It was a new sun. And I just felt this almost like decrystallizing in my head. And my third eye, as they say, opened. And really, what is that? That's just your intuitive part. You know, it's that part of you that, well, we call sixth sense, that, you know, maybe we should trust, maybe we shouldn't. I'm telling you, fucking exists and more. And basically, you know, I would say, I don't know, I elevated to a higher level of consciousness, more awareness to this isn't what matters. What matters is now. You know, all we've got is fucking series of moments and now. Why waste now fucking fretting about the past that's gone? And why waste now fretting about the future that you can't do nothing about? And it seems to be this constant barrage of doom and gloom from the mainstream media that the vibration is really low. And then, you know, that kind of vibration, I don't want to be in that. And it was almost that somebody had awakened me to that. So I guess I had some kind of spiritual awakening, if you like, I don't know. But it felt, first thing it told me is go and connect with nature. And I'm really lucky to live here. Serendipity happened. I mean, I moved out to the New Forest at the beginning of this, before that living in the city. And like I said to you at the beginning of this, if I'd have been living in the street where, you know, the kind of people that were around, I'd be fucking in prison or dead. So I'm here, I'm out in nature, and I'm really grateful. It made me realize that, you know, all you got is now, and look at what you got. You know, you should be fucking grateful. Just waking up in the morning, right? How many people died while you were sleeping, but you're awake. That deserves a smile and a bit of gratitude. So I start my day with, you know, gratitude and you know, self-love, if you like. You know, not loving as I'm a hot shit, but I do believe that I'm from something divine, as are you. We are part of everything that is, ever has been, and ever will be. And that is a vibrational field, if you like. And that's what I honestly believe now. Now, I've never been a religious man. I don't believe in man-made religion. I think it's all fucking bullshit and hypocrisy to fit part of an agenda. But I do believe in a divine universe, presence. Something created life. And we are a part of it, and it's a part of us. And if it's divine, therefore I must be. I must be, as are you. So too many people self-loathe. You know, before you can help anyone in any way, shape or form, you got to get you right. And, you know, Buddhism talks about that. Every real serious spiritual faith talks about, you got, if you want to get others right, get you right first. And then you can, you know, help others. So basically all I wanted to do is make the most of now. So I used to go away 3 times a month flying abroad. Teaching, and that haven't done that since this whole period of time. So of course, big huge part of my income's gone, but you know, I've made it up elsewhere in other means. But I couldn't do what I do, so I had to occupy my every moment as best I could. So nature was a great way. I started getting out in nature, feel connected. You know, I take off my shoes, I forest walk all the way through. You know, and I feel connected with something higher than us, let's say, right? And it makes me feel peaceful. It makes me want to move away from the violence. Yeah, I know I can do that. I know it's there. It's a shotgun under an overcoat, and I fucking cover it up. So it's a bit like that. So I wanted to explore, you know, maybe higher parts of myself. You know, I want to, but because nobody's, you know, tier one in their human form in any way. We've got, you know, everybody's got baggage and fucking shit to deal with. But in terms of a spiritual sense, I started to really embrace now every moment. And I do, I try and be that way. It's difficult, but I try and do it. And every morning I meditate. So your subconscious mind, left to its own devices, will always take the path of least resistance. And the path of least resistance will be, it will just steer a mishmash of broken biscuits and negative thoughts in your head, because it takes constructive energy to think positively. But a lot of people wake up and their emotional state, and they're shitty and they're depressed and they don't know why. Well, your thoughts affect your feelings. And your feelings are your state of being. And your state of being is the every moment that you live. So if you are living every moment that you live in this fearful state, worrying about with all this fear mongering, you can understand a very low vibration. And when there's the saying, it's a heaven's within you. It's not a place, it's within you. So you manifest what you want to create. And that starts with how you think. So meditation takes you from that beta brainwave into alpha theta brain band wave, where you are now, your analytical mind, your cognitive conscious brain is idle. It's still. And there's this moment where it's just peace, right? Now you'll get thoughts come into your head and you just don't pay them any attention. Just look at, well, recognize they're there and let it go. Eventually you can get that to a point where you can go very still very quickly. And what you recognize now is when these thought patterns start coming across from your subconscious brain, you recognize, fucking hell, was I thinking that? I don't want that. That's negative. So now you've got an opportunity to reframe it, or rewire and fire a new neural pathway that thinks differently, that will make you feel different. Because your thoughts and your feelings are your state of being, and your state of being is now. So there's a good chance that even with everything going on in the world, you know, right now, I'm all right. I'm relatively safe. I'm not under threat. You know, I've got a lovely wife in there, sat there. I've got my beautiful dog over there. I've just had a nice meal. We're going to have a nice little Jack Daniels with honey in a minute. You know, I'm good. Life's good. Right now, chances are where you are right now, whoever's listening to this, right now, you're all right. You're not under danger. You're not an immediate threat. So why worry right now about what's going to happen next week when you can live now? Because all you've got is a series of moments of now, 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 so on. So this, I've meditated every single day, more or less, since all of this. And I played with meditation when I was, you know, a young karateka. You do the moksa at the end and you breathe, and I've used it for visualization, but I never realized its capability. And it allows you to quieten your analytical mind so that you can find that peaceful state. And in that moment, you recognize, well, you start to realize, well, I want to live every moment like this as opposed to like that. And doing that out in nature, doing the things you love, getting out, I like to train in the woods, you know, just all sorts of stuff like that has made me very much more peaceful. So the book title was always going to be Path to a Peaceful Warrior. And where I said it is taking a shift now from when I started it, is because I am the last person on this planet that you would have believed that I was going to have this awakening experience. I was a skeptic, and I always believed in there was more, but I had a healthy respect for it, and you know, didn't have any feeling one way or another. And so for me to suddenly get the what Jeff ever got now, it is a big shock. It's a big shock. But it's my summit. So with that, I want to devise another sister UC channel called Path to the Peaceful Warrior. And it will be related to all non-physical means of personal protection. So there will be some soft skills that relate to avoidance, escape, evasion. There'll be fitness and cross training that might have some parkour, basic parkour stuff to in order for evasion, non-physical, right? But then it would have other things such as strength training, so calisthenics, mace bell, which I've just discovered, which is great, some kettlebell work and stuff, and task specifically training for being a fit, healthy, capable citizen, let's say. So I also incorporate general physical preparedness, or GPP, and athletic conditioning. So they'll have that kind of error as well. The other would be diet, nutrition, looking at the benefits of plant-based and various other things, right? Looking at supplements that can help. So supplements for your immune system, such as, you know, vitamin D2, D3, magnesium, zinc. Supplementation and hydration, learning how to filtrate water. So get a distiller, distill all your water and put it in glass. They've been fucking us up for a long time with tap water, and mineral water ain't no different. So get a distiller. So stuff like that for health and well-being. And then some philosophy, and maybe some pertinent quotes. I might talk about a quote from a book and then say, well, let's look at this in layman terms and discuss what that could mean to us now here. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Talk about meditation extensively, about different methods of meditation. Talk about holotropic breathing and breath work to, again, enhance white blood cells and the immunity. So Wim Hof, people are familiar with him, but there's many other methods. Cold water therapy, great for building the immune system. So a method of personal protection would be, how do you boost your immune system? It's non-physical personal protection. It's relevant. Do you know what I mean? How could I run down the bottom end of an alley and run 6 foot, climb up a wall, get on the top to higher elevation to get away from a threat? Well, it's nothing to do with physically fighting, but it's relating to your personal protection. Meditation. So how do I get past that analytical mind so I can think in a more constructive thought pattern? You know, that kind of stuff. In terms of spirituality, I will talk about that. So I know that I am here to teach other people. I know that. And that vehicle is, you know, self-preservation, which can lead to other areas in your life, right? But I also believe that I'm in part now should be teaching people who they really are and what they really are and what capability they really have beyond the 3D world that you're programmed and indoctrinated since school. So part of that would be, I would say to you, strive to find that spiritual part of yourself. You know, so spirituality is a big part of that. To just try to discover your true self. So I want to know me, not Lee Morrison, close quarter combat instructor international, not Lee the geezer, not this person that looks like this. I want to know me, inner me, on the deepest level or the most expanded level, whatever. I want to know what the highest version of me is capable of being. And that's a spiritual thing, you know, and I've transcended the violence. Don't mistake kindness for weakness. It's on tap. But, you know, I choose a different path. I choose this. So the idea of the peaceful warrior is to put an eclectic mix of things relating to well-being, correct emotional conditioning, spirituality, philosophy, strength, diet, all these kind of things. And that's what it will be. And that's what it is, really. But it's an evolvement. And I believe that my teachings should evolve as I evolve, because that's the way it's always been. So it again, might not be for everybody, or it might be for everybody. You know, you just don't know it yet. But don't take that as anything like, you know, no one's getting preached to here around in the Bible. You know what I mean? I ain't religious at all, but I do believe that we create our own white light. You know, you are what you think you are. And in this moment, if you can control your thoughts, become a master of your thoughts, you become a master of your life. And, you know, I'm not by any means there, but I'm closer than I was. You know,
man, if that's not all we can all strive for, to be closer than we were yesterday, then that's it's a good ambition, Matt. I just want to thank you so much for your time. You've been incredibly generous. We've been talking for a long time now. You're giving us content, and you've given hundreds and hundreds of hours of content over the past 15 years or so that I've been following. Without you realizing, I've been watching, but. Mate, you continually give. You're a fantastic teacher. You've been from an upstart to a statesman.
Yeah, you know that.
But it's fascinating to get to watch your continual evolution, mate. And on behalf of the listeners of the show, I want to thank you for coming back. And
it's my pleasure.
Is there anything you'd like to plug? Anywhere you'd like to send people for more information? Or
No, I'll just say that, you know, if I burst anyone's bubble with all that, you know, build a bridge and get over it.
Mate, that's the best closing plug I think we've ever had. All right. Thank you very much, Lee. It's been a pleasure talking to you again.
All right, Joe. Thanks a lot, mate. Take care now.
We'll talk again soon. Well, thanks once again to Lee Morrison. I hope you've enjoyed that episode, learning from one of the world's truly great combative instructors about how he goes about creating more great combative instructors. As I said in the interview, Lee's guys and girls, his UC elite, they are some of the best combative instructors in the world. So it's great for me as someone who not only trains regular people, but trains other instructors, to sort of pick his brain about how he goes about doing that and what the core elements are that make such great instructors under the UC umbrella. And also just to see what Lee's up to now on his path to the peaceful warrior. Now, you may not agree with everything Lee said. As I said in the first intro of the last episode, I don't agree with everything Lee said. We have different views on a bunch of things, but I'm certainly not going to censor his thoughts, and I'm certainly not going to invite someone onto a podcast and then tell them what they can and can't say. So you make up your own mind about Lee's view on things. I think it's amazing to watch his evolution as a human being, as an instructor. If you've been a fan of his work for many years, as I have, it's quite interesting to watch. I just want to thank Lee once again for his time on the podcast. And I encourage you to join us again next week, where we'll be joined by our return guest, Mr. Tommy Joe Moore. Tommy's going to be talking about his new book, The Shanghai School of Street Fighting, which is all about the Fairburn Sykes Defendu method of self-defense from World War II. It's a pretty amazing conversation. Had a lot of fun with Tommy, as always, so make sure you check that out next week. All right, that's it from me here at the Managing Violence Podcast. I'll talk to you next time.